Just a note from our sponsors and partners, the Any Day IO series is here. We've been working with them since the beginning, and we finally have our own colorway out. It's matte black, aka the IO collection, and you can get it for 10% off your order if you go to the Any Day website, anyday.com, cookanyday.com, promo code Dave to get 10% off. You get it. You use your microwave in ways you've never done before. It's the best way to cook at home. You can store in it and you can serve in it. It's a no-brainer. We have 20% off Athletic Brewing. If you go to Athletic Brewing, you can type in the code ATHLETICGIFT20 for the best microbrews beer. It's awesome beer that's non-alcoholic, and we drink a lot of it. And they have great sort of monthly specials. And we've been drinking a lot of their day packs as well. A lot of the Athletic Lights. That's probably consumed the most at our studio. And something that Chris Ying now is just blowing through now that he's stopped his coffee subscription at the coffee shop.
Cometeer Coffee.
Cometeer. You get $40 off your first two orders, Cometeer Coffee, by putting the promo code Chang, C-H-A-N-G, into Cometeer.com. And, you know, if you like drinking coffee, this is the best way to do it, I think. And, of course, 10% off all Momofuku goods, promo code DOMO10 at shop.momofuku.com. You can put in those promo codes, or you can visit us at all the great supermarkets, grocery stores, Targets, Whole Foods, Kroger's, etc., and visit us and have all our new flavors. And really appreciate all the support, guys. And of course, you can catch Ying Cooks the Internet on our YouTube channel at Major Domo on YouTube, Major Domo Media. Search Major Domo Media, not just Major Domo.
Major Domo Media.
On YouTube and hit subscribe. You have to hit subscribe because something again may happen to Chris Ying.
It's just the more we threaten my life on the show, I feel like the less people believe us. But
yeah,
this time it might be true.
Maybe. All right, let's get on to the show. Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Major Domo Media. Thank you, Latingo, as always. This is something we haven't done in quite some time. It's not necessarily an Ask Dave. We will have an Ask Dave, but this is a DC show after
dark. After dark.
So dark.
Where is the light switch? It's so dark out here.
It's so dark. Chris Ying is currently on the 11th floor. I'm on the 12th floor of a hotel. We are currently in New Orleans, a city I've spent a tremendous amount of time in. I was trying to calculate. I think I've spent in my lifetime over a month at least in this city. And Chris Ying now knows how I navigate this city.
It's this. I can't even really describe this. We were wandering around, the French Quarter and the Bywater areas and things like that. And I was like, how do you know where we're going? I thought, where's the hotel? And he orients himself by the casinos. He just looks, he examines the skyline, searches for a casino, and then says, I'm 25 feet from that casino. So that's where I need to go.
Some people, our ancestors used the stars, right, to navigate, to trailblaze the wilderness. I feel the same way. There's also stars in Harris Casino or Caesar's Casino, whatever.
I was going to say, our ancestors who would navigate by the stars never just popped into one of the stars for a quick run of the craps table. But yeah, same thing.
Yeah. Well, we arrived this morning. Chris and I took the same flight from LA, and we arrived this morning. And thank you, Chris, for helping me with my luggage. We're here again for Amazon's Thursday Night Football, the Jacksonville Jaguars against the New Orleans Saints, and we got a lot of work to do, a lot of eating to do. So we're blessed this week. But I herniated my disc about 6 months ago. I've had a really crazy year of health and just crazy shit. And last night, somehow, I don't know what happened. I did work out on Saturday and I worked my legs. This is what happened.
Leg day. Never
leg day. And I didn't think something happened, but the next morning I was like, that's pretty tight. And this morning, boy, did I need help. Thank you, Chris, for being my orderly.
Well, yeah, because I heard you thanked me for helping with the luggage, and people not familiar with the situation then had to just sit there and think, Chris is just on along the ride to carry Dave's bags, I guess. But yeah, you hurt yourself. You walked up to the gate when I was sitting there, and my first reaction was, is he doing a bit? Is he mocking somebody? Why is he walking like this? What's happening right now? But it seems like you are in extreme amounts of pain.
Yes, and I'm only, should I say, I feel like, again, Frodo and Samwise with their Lembas bread. I don't have that much painkillers left. And I have to really ration it out.
For the work.
So I'm filming tomorrow, so I need to use it for that. And again, Thursday, we're going to go live. So I'm saving it for that. But I did not have the strength to put my bags over into the luggage compartment up top. So thank you, Chris. I felt like an old lady.
You know how I know Dave is in real pain is, in addition just to the visual signal of he's limping and really looks like he has like a handicap here. The best indicator that you are in pain is that you are every 20 or 30 seconds letting out just an audible groan of pain. You'll just be walking and then I'll be walking next to him and he'll just go, oh, just like, oh my God, this is extremely painful. So, but you're a champ out here, man.
I was in so much pain that they offered me a wheelchair service.
This is true.
And the last time I was here for work, which was like 3 months ago, or whenever my back was screwed up, I had to be wheeled around in a wheelchair. I couldn't get on and off the plane. So, yeah, this is great.
It was like an emergency wheelchair because like one of the stewards like saw him walking off the plane. And we didn't request a wheelchair. They were just like, let's get a wheelchair down here. Like this one.
This guy looks terrible.
It was amazing.
Yes. So I'm feeling a little sad that I can't move around as well as I'd like because New Orleans is a wonderful city. It's one of my favorite cities. Compared to London, the city is infinitely cooler. Yeah, I'm going to trash London. Guess what? You tried to annex America, but it didn't work out. Didn't work out so well for you guys.
You don't even have
a constitution. You don't even have a constitution. The UK does not have
Magna
a constitution.
Carta.
No, I mean, how does government even work? You guys just make shit up on the fly. I'm serious. There is no constitution. There's no like nothing. I don't know how anything gets done.
Well, I think they're still relying on the Magna Carta. And they probably feel like they have, you know, stake in our constitution.
Man, Charlemagne had a great name. Real good name. Real good one. Anyway, no, I do love New Orleans. I think it's really one of my favorite cities. It's unfortunate when we film Lucky Delicious that people in New Orleans got mad at me because they thought that I was talking crap. But I wasn't. I said I love New Orleans. I just think that there may be better ways to sometimes cook your crawfish. That was all I said. Sometimes.
I think okay. That is mostly what you were saying. I think you may have said something to the degree of, this is why I like Houston. They actually, you know, move their cooking forward and New Orleans, you know, you're stuck with this boiled
No. You are extrapolating. You are poll quoting a TV series. I'm telling you right now, I love New Orleans. I spent a lot of time here. I love it dearly. All I was saying is maybe there's better ways to cook crawfish than a seafood boil. I'm not saying seafood boils are not delicious. I'm saying sometimes maybe steaming might be the better way. Actually, let me rephrase that. Steaming crustaceans is the second best way to cook your food. The best way is to fry in a wok.
Yes, yes, that's true. Yeah, you do love New Orleans. We were walking around the city. You were feeling nostalgic about all the places. You knew where everything was, orienting yourself by casino stars.
We got rejected from Brennan's. That was fun.
Yeah.
We walked in, and they're like, yeah, no, we don't have any tables for you. And Monday, by the way, Monday, everything's closed in this town. Most of the things are closed. And a lot of the great restaurants are in the French Quarter. So I really do love this town. We were walking around and I thought it was a good thing to walk around because it was going to stretch my back. Turned out to be a very bad idea. So I'm not going to walk around anymore. I got to save my back for filming. But it's good to be here, Chris Yang.
Yeah, man, it's been a while. I've spent a lot of time here too, and man, I really love this city. It is unique in its charm and its beauty and its culture, man. It is, and the food is good. Food's good.
There's a lot of funny things that happened today, so we'll get into that. But I want to do three things. We're going to do a Slice Nola edition, and then we're going to get into a Dave Stradamus. And then we're going to get into our, you know, groundbreaking football analysis that's known as PFFW. And we're going to talk about the game of the week. And really, again, we're going to be pitting the city of Jacksonville versus the city of New Orleans and their food on the five S's. And gotta say, it's not looking good for one city. It's not looking really good for one city. All right, let's take a break. This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Great iced tea takes you somewhere else, like new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea that we have here at the Spotify Studios and drink quite a bit, where unexpectedly blackberry flavor transports you to a berry delicious place. So refreshing, you may never want to leave. You will eventually have to, though. But take your time. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf. That's 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing: keeping it bullshit free. That's why their pasture raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free. You know, as the word of the day, redolent. I've never used that word. Have you used that word, Chris, in a paper before?
I'm sure if you examine the body of nonsense things I've written about food, I've probably thrown the word redolent out there once or twice, unfortunately. Yeah, no, but I still don't know how to use it properly. Like, it means, okay, the definition has here is having a strong, pleasant odor. But usually if someone says like, oh, this is redolent of garlic and shallot, this is redolent of whatever. I've never just
Understand why you just say like, the soup smelled awesome. Like, why do you have to use redolent? Right?
Okay.
Well, how about this? The soup was fucking awesome.
Okay. I see you, Ernest Hemingway. You're just all about concision of prose. That's, you want to whittle things down to the words you need. Yeah.
Redolent.
We should just do this.
What are you trying to hide?
Huh? How many words do you think would be in
redolent? Is like a listen, for somebody that uses the word redolent, all right, for this is the literary vocabulary equivalent of some dude driving a yellow Ferrari. All right, You throw around the word redolent, you're giving me the vocabulary equivalent of a loud, obnoxious, fast car.
All right, so I'm looking online to find out how many words are in Webster's dictionary. It seems like there's 400,000 words. How many words in the David Chang unabridged English dictionary? How many words do you think there are total?
I use probably 2,000. Laugh it up, fuzzball. All right, we're gonna get into the three things. Three things I think about when I want to eat in New Orleans. These are not the best things. These aren't the things that I want to check off first. And is going to be excited to know that Central Grocery is not on there.
You don't have something against Central Grocery?
No, he thinks the muffalata is the greatest thing ever invented. Yeah, I did say to Ying, we're going to go there. It's not on my top 10, right? Top 10 things that I want to do. probably 11.
Which is, you know, which is a good sign given how many, that means there's a lot of good stuff here. But you've got three here, three things.
Yeah, the number one thing I want to eat right when I get here are the lima beans at Willie Mae's Scotch House. Yes, it's the fried chicken, but I believe the lima beans are the best beans I've ever had. Yeah, and it's butter bean, same thing. And it is a real treat. I really want to eat that with rice. I think it's tremendous. I love it. Unfortunately, Willie Mae's had a kitchen fire, so it's temporarily closed. But if you've been to this town, it's a very famous restaurant. And I the reason why I say that, maybe not something in other places that serves it like that, because I have to sit down. Like, it's a much more formal setting. What I love about Willie Mae's is you can just order and sit down, and it's super casual. It's in and out. Number two, I want to get oysters at Casamentos. I can never pronounce it right. The location's much more in, I don't remember the name of the neighborhood, but it's just in a cool part of New Orleans that I think. And it's hard to beat. It's just one of the coolest oyster bars. And there's a lot of oyster bars here. But what I love about this restaurant, it's closed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
It's only open 3.5 days. It's true.
Uh-huh. It's cool. It is also the restaurant that you see Bradley Cooper's character opening up his million oyster penance in Dirt. Yep. Yep.
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, because you've never been there.
In that opening scene of that really important movie, that's where he is.
That's where he's shucking a million oysters.
Do you think Casamentos is bummed that that's what it turned out to be?
Well, I don't think a lot of people know. I don't even know if it's true, but I've seen that oyster bar in that movie because he was filming in New Orleans. I believe that it was. And it's a great place. And they have a thing called the Oyster Loaf. You should try that.
What?
Anything called an oyster loaf? Chef's kiss. What a great name. Oyster loaf. I will say, too, we just had some local native oysters, Chris, and when I smelled them, it was very redolent.
Nice. Very nice. Very, very nice.
It tasted very different than the East and West Coast oysters. It was much more of a, it ended with a punch in the face. It was
this assortment of all things. We had East Coast, we had some West Coasts. Oh my God, I sound like that table. And then we had these local ones, and they were very different. They tasted very different.
And the third thing I want is a domiciles. Domiciles? I can't pronounce it. How do you say it?
I think it's domiciles.
Domiciles. It's a very, it almost looks like what is that word? What is that, the term for a word that you could say backwards and forwards? An anagram. No?
No, it's a
palindrome. That's it. But with a D instead of an S. I swear to God, I don't know why when I look at that thing, it always looks like a palindrome to me.
For those wondering, it's nowhere near
a palindrome.
If there's no resemblance whatsoever. If you're learning the English language from listening to the Dave Chang Show, it is not. It is not a palindrome. Domiciles.
I don't know why, but if that's really what I think when I look at the name, I'm like, I think that you could say that backwards too. Well, a lot of this is introduced to me by our great friend Anoop, who's opening up Strange Oysters or Strange Delight in Greenpoint in Brooklyn. Anoop is from this town, and he has really shown me the ways. And this place is one of my favorite restaurants in the world because it makes no sense whatsoever. Fucking ever. You walk in, and it looks like a basement, like a 1970s wooden basement, right? Well, like sports banners and shit. And then you see a photo of the Manning Bros because it's there because they grew up here. It's their favorite place to get a po' boy. You see like a Beetle Light flag. And when you order, you order at like one corner, you take your ticket, you pay at another corner, right? And then you get another ticket, and then you, I can't remember, but the system is so absurd. I love it. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They pour you a goblet. It's a goblet. And I'm going to add this to you, the Dave Stradamus. This is a preview of the Dave Stradamus. I think goblets are going to make a big comeback. It's taken 400 years for goblets to come make a comeback, but it's going to fucking make a comeback. Goblets. It's had a real hard time making a comeback. But it's
when goblets were since, so are you talking about like the Middle Ages or something? Goblets, we're talking about like, yeah, King Arthur's table,
like Henry II. I peaked around, you know, the 15th century. So it's been more than 400 years. I think. Yeah,
I always associated like the goblet though is always like I had my own goblet and I drank everything out of this goblet. Is that how you
it's
think?
Just such a good name. It's just such a good word. Yeah. Right? Why don't we use it more? Why don't we get it at restaurants more? A goblet.
I think because it's a pretty it's a pretty silly shape. It makes me feel pretty foolish to have a goblet of anything.
Yeah, but it looks so great. It looks cooler than a champagne glass. A goblet. So the goblet peaked just as a history lesson, 15th to 16th century, and then really, you know, had a it's had a dark time. It's had its own, you know, dark ages. Until now, it's going to make a big comeback. The goblet.
Henry II was the 12th century. Just throw that out there.
Whatever. I mean, Henry the 22nd.
Again. I would have let it go had you not prefaced that with a little history for you all.
Henry the 22nd. I mean, the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson of Henry II. Yeah. So, you get this beer, and it's the coldest beer. This goblet, they keep it just, it seems like liquid nitrogen, right? It should shatter because it's so cold.
It's a frosty glass goblet.
It's a goblet, though.
Oh, my God.
And my God, it's so cold that it makes your teeth hurt, right? In a good way. It's, I've never had a beer colder than this beer, and I don't know how, but it's the coldest beer in the world. It really is.
That sounds so good. That sounds so delightful.
It's so what you want. And listen, I think the Po' Boys are fine. I could get, you know. I'm always saying this because I just think Po' Boys are sort of overrated. Hmm. Not overrated, but they're not like, in the terms of American subs and sandwiches, they're not better than the East Coast stuff. It's not.
Po' Boy over Muffaletta, though.
Muffaletta over a Po' Boy.
Wow. You must hate Po' Boy.
But we're talking about, what's the tournament called when you don't make the NCAA 64?
The NIT.
Yeah, they're in the NIT bracket.
Po' Boys are in the NIT. That's fine. Cal's usually in the NIT. It's fine.
Yeah, they're in the NIT bracket, but it's a wonderful place. So that's what I think about. And you know, when we got here, Casa Menos was closed. We got Chris and I had to do some work, so we didn't get a chance to go to Domeliza's. That palindrome is coming into effect, you see, guys.
Seth Limode
and Willie Mays is temporarily closed, so we had to go somewhere else. So Chris gave us a place, he wanted Po' Boys, so we went to Killer Po' Boys.
Got a Killer Po' Boy, but the real star of the show at Killer Po' Boy was after Dave had placed the order, I'd, you know, brought our drinks to the table, and he was lingering. He was lingering at the counter. And he was sort of, I didn't hear what he said, he was sort of remarking on something he saw in the drinks fridge, and I was like, what did you find over there? At this restaurant, in the drinks counter, next to the Diet Coke and the Crystal Geyser, was a THC soda, just at a restaurant.
Yeah. Can we just press pause here, folks, to think about the magnitude of this? I mean,
in our lifetime,
in our lifetime, this is honestly more spectacular than going to the fucking moon. I mean,
it's crazy.
Landing on the moon, the lunar landing's got nothing on this. And I don't know why people aren't talking about it. You know what it should be? Hey, you go to New Orleans? You know you can buy fucking TNC at a restaurant? Nobody told me that. Nobody told me that.
She said, and then the girl at the counter said, you can buy it at a grocery store?
At the grocery store.
You can buy it anywhere. Like, it is remarkable. If you think, okay, what are like the big inventions of our time? Okay, the smartphone, huge world-changing invention, right? But you saw that coming. It was like, oh, here's a phone, here's a computer, now here's a computer and a phone. Now it's a fancy phone, now it's a smartphone. Who saw going from you cannot buy marijuana to
right,
I can get it at a restaurant?
Yeah, and I thought the reason I was looking so closely at the bottle, the can, I was like, oh, this is probably some of that CBD bullshit. Like, no, 6 milligrams of THC. And yep. I was really shocked. So we bought a few. And that's where a podcast sounds the way it does right now. I assure you, these drinks are not CBD.
They're not CBD. I am not feeling, my body is not feeling relaxed in any way.
So I just, again, it is a monumental moment. Can you just think about it in your city? Can you imagine going to your local bodega or your grocery store, or you're picking up some pizza and you're like,
yes,
hey, would you like some of the drink? He's like, yeah, let me get 24 milligrams of your finest effervescent beverage. Is insane to me and amazing, man. Yeah. If Thomas Jefferson was alive today, man, he'd be like, democracy fucking works. Slam dunk.
It is truly, truly crazy. It's like being able to buy cigarettes in an elevator. It's just like, how is life this convenient?
That would be pretty cool. When I used to smoke cigarettes out in Wyoming, there was a place, a bar that sold onesies. So good. Like 10 cents a cigarette. That was beautiful. That's the next.
I always find that to be so crazy. Here's 10 cents. Here's a cigarette. Okay.
Well, those are my three things. I got off topic. I was surprised. We're going to try to find, we have a big eating day tomorrow. Right. By the time this airs, it'll be Thursday. We're filming tomorrow. And first of all, I hope I can walk without a noticeable limp. I'm hoping the producers don't get mad at me because I have a limp or my back's messed up.
I was trying to figure out if there's a way you could like lean into it and spin it as a cool walk, because it's almost there. You're like really lean to one side. It's almost cool. It's almost cool.
Definitely not cool. So we have a big eating day. I honestly think there's a 12,000 calorie day tomorrow. For real.
Yeah. This is the caloric experience. Me and all big over Whit.
Me and big Andrew Whitworth. LSU boy comes home.
Like I know what's on this menu, and I think that you're going for the gold of the caloric experience tomorrow, because I think you're gonna order. It's you have agency in this, because in the morning, the first restaurant, you have to order.
But the difference is Whitworth at his peak weight when he was playing for the Bengals was like 375 as a guard. He's a huge mountain of a man.
Yeah. He might get there again tomorrow.
He's now like 300 pounds and he's like 6'7". Yeah, I know. I'm a little worried that I'm going to be able to out-eat him. And I don't know what that says about me. That's what my concern is.
I think he's going to be respectable tomorrow for sure.
All right, we'll take a break. We're going to get into a slice.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Well, slice of life, NOLA edition. So it's about 10 p.m. Is it Central Time? Whatever it is here. Chris and I just came back from dinner after gambling, which we'll get into. And I have to say, I kept on telling the server, thank you so much for letting us sit here because this is the greatest dining experience of my life. I've never laughed so hard. This is pure joy. I've never gotten to see this or experience this. And I kept on telling like everybody's like, are you guys hearing them? This is fucking gold. This is fucking gold.
You did legitimately tell the server this. You did. You were just like, thank you. You really did say, thank you so much for sitting here. This is the best night of my life.
I did say that because I've never laughed so hard at dinner because Chris and I were not even looking at each other. We're talking. Granted, I had the Monday night game, which is still on right now, on the corner. And it was a strange table because we were looking outside at other people. And it's hard to describe, Chris. Right.
We were a situation. Yeah. I mean, just for the context of the story, we were just sat in this table, like catty corner to each other, both of our seats facing out toward, you know, the river or whatever, out toward the outside patio, which meant that our back was to the dining room where five or six top sat right behind us.
And shout out to Dana, by the way, you failed any promise. You lied. You said you'd buy our round and a bottle of wine for us, and you didn't.
It never came.
I'm just saying, never came, Dana.
You were very nice, Dana. I remember that. We met you at the host stand. You were very nice and sweet.
I took a photo with you, Dana, and you gave me a false promise. I will never forget that. You broke my heart.
It's true. But to the meat of the story here, Chang.
So we're sitting down, and I don't know. Chris and I also did a strong move. We ordered 24 oysters in the entire appetizer section.
Literally the entire appetizer section.
One salad. Yeah.
And yeah. No entrees. Steak
tartare, shrimp boulettes. What else? Baked feta.
Fried quail. Focaccia.
Focaccia and the Caesar. No, the wedge salad. 24 oysters. And they sent a foie gras. Yeah.
We will not be terrorized by the entree section. We will not be held hostage by entrees.
Of the entree. Anyway, midway through, they set a table behind us, and it's also there was a convention, so there were conventioneers behind us. I would say, well, not well-to-do, but somebody was clearly from the West Coast, and the reason why I was so excited, folks, is if you know that you've seen the movie Sideways. I love the movie Sideways because I always wanted to meet a guy like Miles, right? Whenever Miles is happy, when he's talking something, it's like so exuberantly about the good things. Because most of the time he's just, you know, shoegazing and talking shit about life. But the times he's so excited, it's like it gives me joy, so much joy. It's again, when he's smelling wine and he closes his eyes and he puts his hand to his ears, that type of stuff. Somebody that is just so ridiculous. So over the top enthusiastic about food. And we finally had it. I finally met a real life Miles who happened to be a doctor from the West Coast. And man, he spent so much time. I wish I could have a video of it. He spent so much time ordering wine. I'm like, nah, the notes here on this Chardonnay, no. And that was a wonderful vintage and Burgundy, but you know, they don't have that bottle. Oh, these guys don't have like five of these bottles and they're not even here, right? You know, like they should update the menu. I was like, what the fuck, dude? And he's like, Pinot. And he was literally going over, explaining, lording over his coworkers and peers about his wine knowledge.
Yeah.
And I wanted to punch him in the face.
You. So they sat down and immediately started talking. And the first thing they said to the server was, you know, where are the oysters from? And immediately Dave goes, oh, foodies. And so then they proceed to have a million questions about the oysters, asking these. I just feel when a server gets into one of these situations, one of these predicaments, I just feel so much sympathy for a server who has to just like go along with this. And the guy's asking like, so which oysters aren't dirty? And the server's like, what do you want me to say?
Which one had the red tide? I'm like, what are you talking about?
It was outrageous. I could not.
He was teaching the server about the notes, the tasting notes on the oysters. And I was like, dude, settle the fuck down, man.
Yeah. You've got it.
Oh, you don't have any from Tamales Bay. And yeah. I happen to have a house in Tamales Bay. And he looks at the server and he's like, you don't happen to have oysters from Tamales Bay. And then he looks at the table. I happen to have a house in Tamales Bay. And let me tell you what.
This is just the thing, right? Like, that's like the hallmark of a know nothing, any wonky. It doesn't have to be a foodie. You can be like a person into fashion or music or whatever, where you have one thing you know. And you will go out of your way just to bring up that one thing you know, no matter where you are. You don't have Tamales Bay oysters? Oh.
And then, you know, he's talking still about Tamales. And I know it sounds opinionated, but trust me, they're the best oysters in the world. Perfect amount of brininess, and it's just luscious and sweet. The best oyster in the world.
There was that point he said, the server came by and said, like, oh, how is everything? He said, everything is splendid. It's like, I can't. I wanted to crawl out of my skin.
I mean, I want to know more. I wish I could be more present for these moments because it's so funny. It's so funny to listen to fucking nitwits that think they know anything about anything. It's so wonderful. I want it so much. It gives me so much fucking joy. It was like this fucking person.
And I mean,
absolutely fucking nothing.
Before anybody wants to jump on us for being mean or elitist about whatever, like, this is a person who is just being so aggressive toward the people around him with this knowledge, this quote unquote knowledge. It is somebody who's
up.
He's assaulting people with this. He is assailing people with his commentary. And I said to Dave at one point, I was like, he is just announcing everything he's doing. Now I am putting the shrimp in my mouth. It is so briny. It's just like, I don't need to know, dude. Like, so we're not being assholes, except because he's being an asshole.
And it was critiquing. He was critiquing every dish. Oh, the ceviche and the salmon. I don't know about that one, but the shrimp. If you happen to know somebody that likes to die like this, I need to figure out a way to have a table next to them without them seeing me. So I can just, it brings me joy. I want to listen to the conversation from the other table. Of if you know somebody that just can't shut up and they know everything about food and they're trying to like almost be condescending to the sommelier because the sommelier doesn't know as much as you do. You know what? Oh, you're only assistant sommelier. Oh, that's like, you motherfucker. You're only the assistant sommelier. Oh, you're the general manager. So you're the assistant sommelier. Where's the head sommelier?
I was like so embarrassed for, you know what I felt overwhelmingly when I was thinking about it? I was like, I felt embarrassed for Californians because it was just like he was saying to the server, like, where are you from? And he said, I'm from here. I'm from New Orleans. And he's like, oh, from your accent, I thought you were from California, like us. I was like, there's like racism to it. They were all.
He's from the Bay Area, folks, where Chris is from.
Okay.
No, I was reminded of the great movie Notting Hill when they're just tooling on Julia Roberts. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to presume that they might have recognized me. I just want to be like, listen, I'm in the culinary world, and I want to do this. If I had a few more drinks, Chris, I would have. Let me just tell you about your friend. He is fucking 50% right on everything. And walked away.
He's 50.
I just wanted to pull that off.
That's actually a perfect characterization of it. He's 50% right about everything. Oh, you mean so he's like sort of right about some things and wrong about other things? No. He's exactly 50% right about everything he says.
He started giving a little bit of a speech about steak tartare. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right. It is. It's a, you could have had at that moment. You could have had your Goodwill Hunting. You could have had it.
Pomfrits, they make them here. I saw them. So you know they're going to be good here. They're fresh French fries. And I was like, they're the traditional way of eating your steak tartare. I'm like, the fuck are you talking about, dude?
I'm saying you could have had your Goodwill Hunting moment where you walked up to him and been like, yo, go, palm frites are the perfect food for steak tartare. Yeah, La Russe Gastronomie, like page 65. I read that book too. What else do you got?
Anyway, you had to be there, but I'm just saying, if you know of anybody in your life that is this kind of person, please direct them to me. I want to meet them. I want to befriend them. And I want to lie. Before that, though, we did get into some gambling after our killer po' boys. We went to a gambling place. And
Den of decided Vice. Not
to gamble. And I immediately got smoked on blackjack. And then I took out some more money. And we went to the craps table. And then I was like, I was very confused. I didn't know what was going on. Why is there every number as an odd here? This is so weird. There's twos, there's 12s, there's three. What? Mm-hmm. And I thought it was the only table there. Because it was a...
So it was a crapless craps table, I think is what these things are called. And they are, I think that they are just like poison to craps players. But we didn't know. We just walked up. We thought, first of all, these two craps tables were in like a weird under construction annex of the casino. It just felt, it was not that sexy. But then Dave was like, okay, so max odds on six. And he was like, oh, you need a lot more money than that. It's 10x max odds here on every number.
He's like, every number is 10x. I was like, what? What is this, the upside down? What the fuck is going on? Anyway, we proceed to lose there. And then I was like, man, this is such a weird craps. And we're like, yeah, it's a weird craps table. And they said, the real crap table's over there. We're like, oh, shit. So we go over there. And I think Christian got to see the real degenerate side of me.
It could have gotten dark. I saw the gambling. I saw it in his eyes. He got the thirst. He got up there. You could see a possible spiral happening, except the man went on a bit of a heater there.
Even before that, though, I was betting against the table.
Oh, yes. You were down to your last bet.
And I started betting against the table and started to win. And then, right when we moved to that table, I started to do well. So I bet against the team table, and I immediately cooled the table down.
Everybody left. Literally everybody left.
Everyone left because I won a big, big number by betting against the table. And then I started to roll positive. And that went on a little bit of a heater. And Chris Yang didn't know that I could do mathematics quickly.
I didn't know that he was one of those guys at the crafts table who's just saying numbers the whole time. Just saying, just like up at 25, quarter, hard eight. But he just like, it's like he's speaking in tongues. Just numbers and bets are pouring out of his mouth, and he's keeping track of eight different bets on the table. Buy the six, lay the eight, blah, blah. How much is the 12? I was like, what the fuck is happening right now? all the while, he's just like, I've never seen this either. He's heating up. It's like NBA Jam. He's heating up, and he's like, he knows he's heating up. So he's calling out his bets, putting his chips on the table, and throwing the dice before the chips have even landed on the table, like to let the guys.
So there's a reasoning for that. There's a reasoning for that. Sometimes I like to throw the dice slowly, right? I like to stack up a 4 and 4, you know, superstitious wise. But if that doesn't hit, the next thing I do is I go throw in heat, like honest style, just throw in heat. And the reason why I do that, there's a real reason why. You remember, I've had a restaurant and a casino every fucking where possible. I throw it faster to prevent people from betting and slowing it up. If you bet fast, if you don't, the pace is important, right? I hate it when somebody comes in. So if you keep on throwing fast, they don't even have a chance to like feel weird by slowing up the pace. So that's why I go fast as fuck.
He was going very fast, also throwing little stingers across the table, which was impressive. And there was a coup de grace moment at the end, which might be too wonky for people, but I think you should describe it.
Well, I will say it's true. This is the thing. I am not good in school, especially the traditional way. But if school was genuinely taught via gambling or math, I would have gotten a fucking A+. We got 1600, like 800 on the math exam on SATs, because I can do math very well, very quickly when there are odds on a gambling, on a craps table.
It's impressive. I've always wanted to be one of the guys who understood all of the bets and odds, but I was always like, I'm not good enough at math to do that. And to see you do it, I was like, what the hell is going on here? This guy's got them all. Really,
I'm betting everything. And like the combat and everything. Everything. Anyway, I make back all my money and then some. And then on the last dice throw, one of them flies out. So I say same die. I would like to throw the same die again when they come back. They check the dice. And every time I've ever done this, historically speaking, I've always known, man, I should turn off the odds, turn off the numbers. So you can say as a craps thrower, you can turn off your bet. So if they roll a 7, which means it craps out, you get hold all your money, except for what you have on the come line, the ante line. And right when I did that, I said, can I turn my numbers off, please? Chris looks at me like, what? And I throw it and they crap out. And the dealers all looked at each other like,
it was amazing.
They all looked at each other like, shit.
You basically called your shot is what you did. You basically pointed to the bleachers and called your shot and then hit it out of the park. And then
it was so cool.
It was very, very cool. And like a perfect ending to the little streak. It was very, very, it was exciting.
Unless Chris and I had our unbelievable chance encounter with one of the best diners I've ever had the pleasure of listening in.
I'm sure he's still down there waxing poetic.
I don't know how else it's the smallest thing. Let me tell you. The best oysters in the world.
What is the equivalent of that? It's just like saying like a server comes up and says, oh, we have some local steaks here, and just being like, do you have any steak from China? Because I'm a prince in China.
But yeah, it wasn't even about that. The guy was just trying to lecture the server on what about food too. I just one of the worst people I've ever come across in a long time. I hope to come across more of them because it gives me so much joy. It really does make me so... Look how happy I am. I'm so fucking happy to have witnessed this. This fucking jackass actually exists. It was awesome.
It was very sideways.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Dave Shadamas. All right, guys. Putting on my Dave Shadamas hat here. I feel that this weight loss drug, Ozempic and Wegovy and all the others that are out there, which was created for diabetes patients, but now has weight loss properties. I think that the food world at large, I'm not even including just restaurants, at large, and I know that there's been some articles about snack food, et cetera, on the downturn because people are eating less, right? Because I would think that if you're on Ozempic, you have more disposable income than most people, because I don't know how much it is. And the bullshit thing is, like, if I ever lose a ton of weight eating, or everyone's going to think that we're on Ozempic. You can't lose weight now without thinking that you're on Ozempic, which is bullshit.
They'll be right.
And, you know, people have a smaller appetite, right? It really, really reduces your appetite. So people are eating less. I believe that Ozempic is going to cause people to eat less. Sure, that's scientifically going to happen and prove it. But the foods that they will eat are going to be very flavorful and very special. And I think it's going to have a massive effect on restaurants. People don't realize it. The people that spend money on Ozempic probably, again, I'm just from my gut, it has more disposable income because the health insurance is not covering it. You know, that's probably $100-$200 a month, I bet, right? I think people are going to be eating much less, much, much less at restaurants. And I think that's going to change the dynamic.
Well, the correlation makes sense. I think you're right. It's people who have the money to spend on Ozempic. Yeah.
Drinking will
go up. So when you say that you think the food's going to become more flavorful and more special, isn't the whole point of Ozempic is that it makes all food across the, like, it's an appetite suppressant?
Yeah, but so when you do eat, before you get full, you're going to want to know that, like, it's super flavorful. It's, like, worth eating, you know? So I think condiments are going to be more important than ever. I would put a huge bet on condiments. Again, makes me even more bullish than I am on the Momo Chili Crunch, etc. But I do think that we don't know the effects of Ozempic on restaurants, especially high-end restaurants. And I think that it's going to have an effect on everything. If you think about it, because this thing is only going to continue. I think it's going to be 20, 30, 40% in like 10 years that the world's on fucking Ozempic. Right. And I think that people, more and more people that are on it, is really bad news for restaurants. It's like really bad news. This is not a bubonic plague, but it's not a good thing for restaurants. We want people to smoke pot all day long.
So what do you say to somebody who's listening who's like, dude, this cannot be true. Ozempic is a niche drug and there's not enough to actually affect the restaurant industry. Are you saying, like, whether it's Ozempic or anything else, the fact that people are, like, suppressing appetite to lose weight is going to have an actual tangible effect?
It's already had an effect on snack foods. It's already had an effect on the snack food industry, right? I think 1.4% of the American population is on Ozempic right now. I think that's going to probably get to 10% in like 24 months or something like that. Something crazy.
That would be a lot of people on Ozempic. That would, if it gets to 10%, like, we're probably on Ozempic too. That's so much.
I don't know. I'm just saying that if it increase, listen, my prediction really is if it does increase and it gets into like the teens percentage wise, my prediction, if it is a contingent on the rise of Ozempic, if it really does grow exponentially, which it sort of has been, I think this is going to have a dramatic negative effect on restaurants.
Wow.
And grocery shopping in general.
In addition to probably many, many, many other side effects, for sure.
Right. And I do think that when people do go out to eat, if that is the case, then if you think about it, then you're going to go for a high calorie meal that is over the top and has all the bells and whistles, right? So I think steakhouses and stuff like that, like if you were going to have like one meal, like you're not even intermittent fasting. I think Ozempic just looks like you're only eating one meal because you're not even hungry for anything else. I think I would imagine that you would want to eat a pretty luxurious meal if you were going to go out. that is. If you're going to a restaurant, that is. I think you're going to spend more money because it's like, I'm not eating that much. So I don't know what the positive effects. There is some positive effect to Ozempic in like higher end restaurants, but I don't. That is more shaky than anything.
I guess I was just thinking, if it's not, you know, the other way to look at it is, if appetites are suppressed and people are going to spend less money going to restaurants, like, where's that money in terms of entertainment going to go, right? Is it going to go somewhere? Are they going to, rather than going to restaurants as their social thing, now everybody's going to go to salsa clubs, whatever.
So my other prediction is a little bit too appetite suppressing. And this is always asked to me to some degree from people. They're like, there's a lot of cocaine in the kitchen. I would say I've seen cocaine by front of the house, especially when I first entered this business. But I would say this. Any kitchen that uses cocaine, they're not a good kitchen. Because you can't taste food, from what I know about cocaine. Right? You know, you can't taste food. So I would never want to be in a place that sort of has that as their thing. Because it means food's not going to be tasted well. It's not going to be at a level that you want. And I've never seen it in a kitchen. Ever. I mean, ever. I've heard stories about restaurants, one particularly in San Francisco many years ago, that was a den of cocaine. You know, people hear about these stories.
Sure. Yeah, of course you're referring to the Ghirardelli Chocolate Factory.
But I, you know, that's one thing. I will say, though, I don't know why, but I feel like cocaine is bigger than ever. And you're going to see it more and more in restaurant bathrooms being consumed.
Oh, you're saying cocaine as a, you're talking about diners.
Diners. I thought it was just like a quick interlude about cocaine and restaurants in general. I just don't think you're going to see it. It's too expensive. It's not going to ever fucking happen. It's just never going to happen. And anyone that thinks it just doesn't fucking happen, at least in my lifetime, I've never really seen it. But I do think that you're going to see it more in restaurant stalls and bathrooms for sure. Until a recession like crushes people are going to be spending money on stupid shit like cocaine.
I feel like that's true. Although Chang is buying on increased drug use across the board here. Yeah. Dave Stradamus.
And strong buying long on Columbia. And the company that makes Ozempic.
Yeah, whoever makes Ozempic, Pfizer, whatever.
My third prediction, with no data whatsoever, I think the crumpet is going to have a big resurgence as well. The crumpet. People are going to start to use the crumpet. You're going to start to see it. You're going to start to see more house-made crumpets on menus.
Okay. This really is a Dave Chang After Dark, man. Let's just to review, the three predictions from Dave Stradamus are: increased Ozempic use will cause a downturn in restaurants, a rise in cocaine use, and crumpets.
And
crumpets are coming.
Yeah. I think that you're going to see crumpets more and more on menus. Freshly made crumpets. House-made crumpets.
Ozempic, cocaine, and crumpets, man. The Holy Trinity. That's what they call it. The OCC.
It's going to be... When's the last time you've had a crumpet?
Long time. I haven't had a crumpet in a long, long time. It's like a fluffier English muffin, right? It's like a
it's a battered dough, and when it's made well, and even the stuff you can get at Trader Joe's are delicious, but a real crumpet with butter, I think it's one of the best breads you could eat. It's so good. And I'd also argue a crumpet is a great, I've said this before, maybe on this podcast, it's a great sandwich bread.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get enough love as a sandwich bread, including a burger, right?
Yeah, I was going to suggest a burger, a crumpet burger.
Because it's like a sturdy pancake, right? It's a crispy, sturdy pancake. And I think they're widely underrated. And I'm just saying, like, I feel like a little bit like Michael, who's the guy that shorted everything in The Big Short? Michael Burry. I feel like him. Like, I'm just buying this option on crumpets, and everyone's laughing at me. But I'm telling you, when it hits, I want to make some big returns on this bet.
London style burgers coming. Yeah. Low line in the bathroom, get back to your table before that crumpet. You can melt some butter on there. Woo! Restaurants in 2024 are gonna fucking rule.
Oh my god.
All right, let's take a break. All right, folks. It's what everyone's been waiting for, which probably is like nobody. It's PFFW. As always, we'll be assessing the five S's: sandwiches, steakhouses, seafood, sweets, and special team / special sauce. All right. Last week, we went 2-1. Overall, not bad. 5-8.
Yeah. I mean, it's not 100% correct, but over time, we're going to be at least 99%.
We called the KC blowing out Denver, called the Buffalo Bills winning. No, I lost that. I lost that bet. I bet the New York Giants, right? Yeah.
I let you keep it because you covered the spread.
Anyway, we're 5-8. Chris lost his.
The cook at Jack in the Box said Nashville fucking let me down, dude.
So listen, folks. In reality, just to like sort of distill this even further, this is really a battle between PFFW is really a battle between two cities. All right. So imagine in the future where maybe football's not even played anymore, but there's you're competing city versus city, and there's food and there's five categories that you have to compete against. Who's going to win? And ultimately you can take a step back and like, what's the better foods? If you think that I'm being like not even elitist talking about this stuff, we do it all the time. Hey, where are you going for work? Oh, I'm going to Little Rock, Arkansas. Meh. Hey, where are you going for work? I'm going to New Orleans.
Oh, nice. Where are you going to eat?
Yeah.
Nice.
We do it all the time subconsciously. You don't even talk about it. So fuck you and your hypocrisy. All right? Yeah, you. Listen, you hypocrite. We do it all the time. Right? It's like, you're going to, where are you headed off to? He's like, oh, I'm going to, St. Petersburg when you could. Right? It's like, oh. Vodka, borscht, okay, maybe some caviar.
I was like, St. Petersburg, Florida? What are you talking about?
Going to Seoul, Korea. Where are you going to eat?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. We do it all the time. And let me tell you one thing. In Jacksonville, remember, this is 5S, so we have a diplomatic immunity. No one can get mad at any of our hot takes on this. When you think of Jacksonville, Florida, what comes to mind?
Paris of the West. A modern Epicurean wonderland. I think about the suites, the incredible steakhouses, world-renowned sandwich, and the seafood, of course. That's what I think of when I think of Jacksonville. I think, boy, howdy, are you ever lucky to be going there for that conference?
I don't think anybody thinks about Jacksonville and food. And that's just not what comes up. I think what happens when you think about Jacksonville are the Jaguars and the PGA Tour has its home office there, right? TPC Sawgrass. I don't know of any other way you could think about Jacksonville. What comes to mind? Nothing. Other than the Jaguars. And I already forgot the second thing I said.
You said, just, okay, if you want me to remind you, Chang, it was the PGA headquarters at TPC Sawgrass.
Yeah, the PGA, that's where people, yeah. But there's a tournament there, right? It's like when people go there, it's the PGA headquarters is there. Right. Mm-hmm. I think when people in golf, they think Jacksonville, Florida, when they think golf. And I also think it's Jason Mendoza from The Good Place, who would always talk about Blake Bortles and the Jacksonville Jaguars, right?
That's basically all.
There's a reason why it was in The Good Place. So I'm just saying there's nothing I could think of. And I could be wrong. And maybe one day we'll film something in Jacksonville and we'll see for ourselves. But having only driven through there once, haven't been there in 30 plus years, I think it's really hard for me to say that Jacksonville is a culinary wonderland.
And yet, you're about to declare its food better than New Orleans? Is that the next part? No.
The only way Jacksonville could win is on special teams. There might be a hot sauce that we don't know about. There might be something. If food related that we don't know about, maybe it could be like the birth of some fast food chain that we don't know about. Maybe it's, I don't know, something. There's something. So I could give special teams to Jacksonville, theoretically speaking. But I don't know if I can versus New Orleans. And listen, Trevor Lawrence is potentially hurt on a short week. He may not be playing. Even if he was playing, I'd still take, you know, the Saints and New Orleans, because New Orleans is truly one of the best places to eat. It has so much to do food-wise. And many awesome things, even though off the beaten path kind of places. And the touristy places are just as good. So I'm just going for sandwich. You know, it says there's a steak in a sack at Shake Sandwiches. And the sandwiches, we can't. This is terrible.
Not this one again. You made us say this last time.
No. So I looked it up, guys. It's okay. Because apparently the Arab American community in Jacksonville has owned this.
In time, so you know, it could not be less okay. We're not going to do that right now.
I agree. It's not like great. It's a derogatory
name for a sandwich, so we're not even going to say it. But yeah, I'm not taking that over. No, the Big Easy. There's just no way. Sandwiches, just hands down. Even the muffalata, po' boys, all the kinds of po' boys, and the banh mi's.
Mm-hmm.
Woo. Mm-hmm. Woo. It's very tough to beat. Very tough to beat. You see, New Orleans, I love you. I love you.
Now, Jacksonville, if you want to get in the game, you might want to sign that crumpet burger to the roster and make that a Jacksonville original. Then we'll talk.
I think steakhouses is also something maybe Jacksonville could win. Maybe they could win, because I would say New Orleans has steak, but not. I mean, Ruth Chris was invented here. That's something. But I could see there's a Chop House 13 that has good reviews. I could give Jacksonville steak. I'll give Jacksonville steaks because I don't think of New Orleans as a meat. Although they do good roast pigs and cochon, and there's a lot of great meat here. A lot of great meat. But I could see on this day, on the game day itself, Jacksonville could have the better steak meat program. All right?
Yeah, I can see that. That's fair.
Seafood. Yeah. We don't have to cover it. Slam dunk.
Do you think New Orleans might have one of the strongest seafood games in the country?
Absolutely. I mean, redfish, drum, there's a lot of local oysters, everything. The history. That's what I think about this city. It is seafood city. Yeah, nothing comes quite close to it, I think. It's the most seafood-oriented city in America.
I was going to say, the people here, it's more integrated. And for the exact reason that, like, steak isn't that much of a thing. People eat seafood here.
Yeah. It's awesome. By the way, we had 24 oysters, not one belly pop. Good job, Oyster Shucker. Dave Chang approves. Sweets. Jacksonville probably has Cold Stone Creamery. You know, the same old stuff. And this, maybe you could let us know about an independent sweet chain or sweet shop, bakery, cookies, whatever, ice cream. We'd love to know. And we will promote the hell out of you guys. If you from Jacksonville, send us some of these places. Please understand that I have to give it to New Orleans this time around. Like, some of the most iconic desserts in American history were invented in this town. Very hard for me to not say the sweets to the sweets, you know, skews to New Orleans as well. Is it a question?
Yeah.
You got the bananas Foster, beignets, pralines, however they pronounce it.
It's actually, in as long as we've been, for the many years we've been doing the PFFW, both publicly and privately, it's been, you don't come across that many cities that have an iconic sweet that is good.
And there's sugar everywhere. Pralines are everywhere.
Yeah.
So, no, I think this is a, yeah, you know, this is to me the real test case. This takes our algorithm to the breaking point because it proves that it's unbiased and it works. I mean, Jacksonville, I think, is the better team. But guess what? Our algorithm doesn't lie. And, you know, it sort of gave Jacksonville Steakhouse and special teams, but New Orleans victorious on the 5S is 3-2. And I think the final score is going to be 21-14. New Orleans.
So the Vegas odds makers have Jacksonville as a 1.5 point favorite. Dave, you're flipping that. You're predicting a 7 point.
You know what? You know what? I'm gonna back that up. I'm gonna back that up. Since Trevor Lawrence may not be playing, I'm going 21-3. 21-3 New Orleans. Yeah. Okay. I just did it. Yeah.
All right. So bettors out there.
And by the way, I'm going to say this on live TV when if I get the chance to do it on Amazon Thursday Night Football. You want to ask me my score? I'm going to say 21-3. Or maybe I should go higher. More ridiculous.
I think a 19.5 point swing.
78-10. They're going to laugh at me. Dolphins did that this season. You're laughing at me.
100-0. New Orleans Saints over the Jacksonville Jaguars. I would appreciate if you became known as the guy on
99-86.
Oh, thanks for asking, Carissa. I've got this one going to overtime. 104-101 New Orleans Saints. Okay, so bettors out there, Dave is announcing a last minute 19.5 point swing in the on the money line here. It's New Orleans by 18 over the formerly favored Jacksonville Jaguars.
And listen, if you are thinking to yourself, that's bullshit, that's not even a fucking good take, Jacksonville is better than New Orleans in food, can you email us at what's your email?
You can email askdave@majordomemedia.com.
What's your phone number again and your home address? Go ahead and say that out for us.
Because we want to know. We want to talk to you if you are very serious about this. And I would love to see, you know, the evidence that if you think that one of these cities is superior to the other in an not obvious way, we give you a chance to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be good. I can't wait to hear it.
Jaguar Nation, talking to you guys. Activate.
All right, we got a steakhouse battle. We're only going to do two games real quickly. Vegas versus Chicago. There's an interesting steakhouse battle brewing here. Which city does the steakhouse the best?
Wow.
Chicago, clearly. Bavette's, Chicago Cut, Gibson's Bar and Steakhouse, and it's old school. But they got Vegas got Golden Steer. There's also Bavette's in Vegas, so that's Cello. And I got to say, man, every casino has a steakhouse, and they're all good. Mm-hmm.
It's probably the best place in the country to get a steak, actually. You can get a steak of whatever kind you want. Or you can go to the Peppermill, eat a steak there.
Yeah. Yeah. Peppermill's good, too. So Vegas steaks. Chicago, this has nothing to do with you or that Justin Fields is injured. I'll take it. Las Vegas. Las Vegas by 8.5.
Okay. Any other upsets to look out for this week?
Not that I can think of. let's see here, Chris. What about your team, San Francisco versus the Minnesota Vikings?
So right now, the Vikings are 7.5-point dogs in this. Corey Lee just posted a really cool-looking dish. Having nothing to do with Christian McCaffrey being possibly out or Deebo Samuel possibly being out, I still think this line is short of the final score. I think this is undervaluing San Francisco right now. I've got it at 10 points.
I think Minnesota is going to win by 10 points simply because San Francisco doesn't have a Juicy Lucy. This doesn't.
We are okay. No, I gave you New York over San Francisco for sandwiches. San Francisco has some good ass sandwiches, man. We are the home of Dutch Crunch.
You know what I'm going to say? Minnesota's got better pizza than San Francisco. Well,
but they don't make it with the Neapolitan flour.
You know what the best pizza is? When you make the dough with flour from Tamales Bay and virgin spring water from Tamales
Bay. Guys, I just got one of those. I just got a backyard oven, and I think I make the best pizza in America now.
All right, we'll take a break. We're partnering with Audi on a new segment, Progress You Can Feel. The fully electric Audi Q8 e-tron brings true craftsmanship and stunning performance to your journey. With fast charging capabilities and impeccable design, Audi knows that how we get there matters. So here's the story of how I got here. One of the biggest moments in my culinary life was moving to Japan and cooking there. And it was also different at the time because most people moved to Europe if they were cooks and learning to further their culinary career. And I went to Japan because it wasn't what you were supposed to do. In fact, nobody knew anything about it. Most Americans didn't work in kitchens 20 years ago. And my story changed everything for me because I got to see that food could be done affordably and cheaply. And at the time in America, 1999 and 2000, food was not considered a thing. If you liked food, it was elitist. Right? It wasn't for everybody. And yeah, you had pockets like pizza or barbecue or things like that that were delicious and talked about, and hamburgers that were just, you know, that was like American food culture. But if you liked anything that was fancier, that was fine dining oriented, you were considered like an elitist snob. It just didn't exist. So talking about food wasn't a thing. And in my family, that was like the only thing we talked about was food. And when I moved to Japan and I was able to travel throughout Asia, and this is also the case in other places in the world for sure. But it was here that I learned that food could be good for everybody. That food did not have to be expensive for, some people. And at the end of the day, I realized everybody wants to eat delicious food. And it doesn't have to be just for a select few. And living in Asia, that allowed me to see that and allowed me to realize that I didn't have to work in the fanciest kitchens now in Asia, in Japan. I could work at places that were sort of lower down the hierarchy because they were still making extremely delicious foods and there was wonderful techniques that I could pick up. And that changed my whole game because it caused me to look at things that other people weren't looking. Because at that time, most people were only focused on fine dining. And I went to a level when America didn't have ramen, really. They only had instant noodles for the most part. And that's what most people knew about ramen, including Asian food and Japanese. We're not even talking about the pork bun yet. So it was a different time when that happened. And a lot of it's right timing. I was able to focus on something that most people weren't looking at. And that gave me a huge advantage, right? I had domain expertise in something that none of the experts knew anything about. I literally was like an expert in America on ramen. And try to find, you know, those moments and pockets in the culture where most people aren't there, right? And I think that's some of the best advice I can give is, try to learn and become an expert at something where there isn't a lot of competition at it. And you also, I think, have to make sure that you're, you have a passion for it as well. But, you know, I could talk about these light bulb moments all the time. And I think what another light bulb moment for me is when I was working in Japan and I was able to work in a bunch of kitchens. But it dawned on me that some of these kitchens were making sort of European dishes with Japanese ingredients. And I would look at the ingredients and make the dish, and it would taste something that was Italian, or taste something that was certainly French, taste something that was American. But none of the ingredients were American or European. They were all sort of Japanese flavors. And I was so confused, because how could that happen? How could you make dishes that were of the same provenance from where the dish was created? And it gave me an idea that flavor was not provincial. It was not something that came from a country. Great flavor was everywhere. And once I saw that those ingredients could be extrapolated and there could be a juxtaposition with all kinds of other things, you could make dishes that sort of transcended from, you know, wherever you were at. And that gave me a huge idea that maybe I could make Japanese food. Maybe I could make ramen in America without using Japanese ingredients. And that was a huge moment for me, because it caused me to not be so reliant upon authenticity in America. And I think understanding a lot of the Japanese sensibilities, what's most important is what's fresh and what's near and what's local, not something that is on paper, right? Traditional. So I decided I wasn't going to make ramen broths with Japanese fish products,
right?
I wanted to use the smokiness that you might get from katsuobushi from somewhere else. So I started to use American, you know, good old hickory smoked bacon from Allen Benton. And that was a pork broth that was really smoky, but I thought it was more Japanese in sort of an idea than anything I could have imported from Japan. So that was a huge moment for me where I could recreate flavors without having to be the authentic ingredient themselves. And that gave us a freedom. It was like being able to, you know, make paintings with like 100 more colors, right? And it was something that became a building block and a cornerstone for a culinary philosophy and principle that we use to this day. So it's something that I didn't think about was going to happen, right? But sometimes you just have to, in my case, work, do it, and eat it, and then ask yourself questions like, well, like maybe this could be applied elsewhere. I don't think Momofuku or myself would have a career today if I didn't have that idea that you could make flavors without the exact ingredients, right? That you could challenge the notion of authenticity. So that was a monumental moment for me. There's progress, and then there's progress you can feel. The Audi Q8 e-tron is just one model within the Audi e-tron family of fully electric vehicles, preparing for a future that is exhilarating, exciting, and thrilling. Audi knows that how we get there matters, and they have the electrified vehicles to make the journey, well, electrifying. Audi, progress you can feel. Learn more at AudiUSA.com/electric. The only thing I think about is that, man, I saw a cook recently and they had burns all over their arm. All over their arm. And when I say burns, they're like lines. You can tell who's cooking what on a kitchen by the lines, because usually it's like the left hand and you can see burns, because what happens is if you're in a busy service, you put your arm in and you get burned. It's just that simple. That little corner from the top of the oven is what burns you all the time. Man, my left arm, my arms when I used to line cook were just looked terrible, right? And I always wanted to be one of those cooks that never burn themselves, right? And the truth of the matter is when you're a really good cook, not only is your uniform spotless, but you almost have no burns on your arms. So it doesn't always mean the case, but you can usually tell if someone's super good. And also that might mean that you just don't cook on the line anymore. Right. Right. But like a really good line cook, like the best line cooks, never burn themselves ever. It's just remarkable, right? So that's something I was thinking about the other day when I saw this cook's, like, doesn't mean they're not going to be great, but I saw all those line, those burns. And that happens when you're learning. And then when you get better, it sort of stops happening too, but it always happens. You always burn yourself. I've seen the best fucking chefs in the world burn themselves and cut themselves. Still happen. Well, and it's just like an athlete having a turnover. It happens, right? So anyway, that was my thought. I don't know why I was thinking about it, because it is what it is. All right, give us 5 stars.